Unreroute the rivers, let the damned water beat. There's some people down the way that's thirsty, so let the liquid spirit free. The people are thirsty because of man's unnatural hand. Watch what happens when the people catch wind, when the water hits the banks of that hard, dry land.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, General Director and CEO Susan Danis of the Florida Grand Opera speaks with Charles Greenfield about the FGO's exciting new season at the Arsht and the Broward Center. Film critic Dan Hudak previews the second annual Key West Film Festival. Chef Norman Van Aken presents A Word on Food, and our arts calendar today features Deborah Margol, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. A partnership between sister cities Nice, France, and Miami launched the Miami Nice Jazz Festival last year, and it's back again featuring many great stars. Founder and CEO Philippe Potesta Herder and Panda Events have their concerts taking place countywide at 7 locations, opening tonight at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center with jazz vocalist Gregory Porter, who opened up this segment, and closing November 10th with the J Blues Band at the Riviera Hotel on South Beach. The festival kicks off Miami French Weeks, an initiative of the French American Chamber of Commerce and the Consulate of France in Miami to promote French culture here in South Florida. And with us today to find out about all of the enticing, exciting details is the founder and CEO of the Miami Nice Jazz Festival, Mr. Philippe Potesta Herder. And welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat, Philippe.
Good afternoon, Ed. How are you?
Great. And thanks so much again for bringing us another superb festival. You've really you're going to be bringing some great talent down here, and you've branched out all over the county. That's something different for this year. And what made you consider expanding to 7 concert venues?
Well, the mission statement of the festival was to promote the jazz culture in South Florida, Miami being the main act. So we decided to expand further south at the South Dade Cultural Arts Center, and also at a couple of venues in Miami Beach, as well as the Miami Gem, the Olympia Theater, where mm-hmm. two of our performances will take place, as well as different satellite events, post events in downtown Miami, like Soya in Pomodoro, PAX. We kind of wanted to also give support to all these venues that are promoting jazz on all year long, on a yearly basis.
Bravo.
And that should be recognized for doing such a good job. As you know, jazz is a tough market here in South Florida. And a lot of people are involved all year long in this process of promoting this great art form. And the festival was really wanted to give our hats off to them and promote their great job.
Bravo for that effort. You know, we have so many great colleges down here and universities kicking out superb jazz musicians every single semester, it seems. And many don't have a place to play. So we need to grow this. This
is definitely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we have a lot of the satellite events are performed by Miami-based artist.
And we'll get to that in just a minute.
Oh, sure.
One more quick question. Tell me more about Miami French Weeks, which your festival opens tonight. What other events and
the French Weeks? The French Weeks were an initiative of the French American Chamber of Commerce, pursuant to promote the French culture in South Florida. So they will have and you can go on their website as well, which is French Weeks Miami. .com, and you will be able to enjoy also one of their great idea, which is called French Cafe and French Spice, which is kind of a declination of what Miami Spice is, but geared toward French restaurants and French establishments. So they have a promotional package to promote those venues and give you great discount. There is also different conventions that are being held. They are more commercial oriented. So nothing really to do with culture, but the point is that the French culture is growing here in South Florida, mm-hmm. and a lot of French people are moving here, and they are a way of supporting this great this great culture here in South Florida.
C'est magnifique?
C'est magnifique.
Yeah. Now, you've already had your pre-opening event over at the Van Dyke Cafe on Lincoln Road featuring the group The French Horn. But tonight, all the excitement is down at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, a magnificent, fairly new performing arts center with the jazz world's darling in male vocal, Gregory Porter. This is exciting stuff, Philippe.
Yeah, thank you so much for recognizing that. Gregory Porter has a long history with the Nice Jazz Festival in South of France, which is the original festival. Mm-hmm. We are the South Florida chapter for them. And we wanted to also pay tribute to his beautiful performances that he's been doing over there for the last 3 years already. He's been on the festival two summers in a row. And we're really familiar with his art and what he's doing, and he's such a great performer. And we really wanted to bring male vocal jazz in South Florida. And the South Dade is definitely the great venue for such a performance. Brand new venue built by the South Dade, the Miami-Dade Cultural Affairs. Mm-hmm. We wanted to bring stellar performers in that venue, which is already doing a great job all year long with a lot of great musicians. Gregory Porter has been doing very good in the U.S. He did his first TV a few weeks ago on Jay Leno. So this is definitely a rising star here in America. And we wanted to pay tribute to all this hard work and sweat and tears, I would say, put behind his career.
It's a great booking, Gregory Porter. The opening set will be, and thank you so much for booking local jazz musicians, the Stamps Jazz Quintet from the University of Miami Frost School of Music. So an exciting jazz evening. And, of course, the headliner, Gregory Porter. His new recordings are lauded, and he's the shining star in the jazz male vocal area. Now, you'll be celebrating the great legacy of Edith Piaf.
Yes.
Tomorrow night.
At the Olympia Theater, formerly the Gusman Center. Edith Piaf's close friend, Ginou Richet, discovered Jill Egro a few years ago. She was also the personal secretary of late Edith Piaf. And 50 years ago, on October 11th, Piaf passed, and we are celebrating the 50-year anniversary of her disparition here at the Olympia in Miami.
Perfect venue.
Yes. Edith Piaf was performed so many times at the Olympia. She kind of made the Olympia what it is. And though her last concert was not at the Olympia, but out of the Eiffel Tower in 1962,
wow.
We wanted to pay tribute to her art that has created many vocations, yeah, around the world and inspired so many artists. So tonight, yes, at the Olympia Theater at the Olympia Theater in downtown Miami, please come out. This is a fabulous show. I would almost call it a musical, because it's going to retrace the life of Edith Piaf from her birth to her death. It's about a 2.5-hour show with a little bit of intermission. And keep also in mind that Jill was the voice of Edith Piaf in the movie La Vie en Rose, performed by Marion Cotillard, who won an Academy Award for that performance, a movie by Olivier Dahan in 2006. And we are looking for a great show, and please, South Florida, come out and just come and visit us on Saturday at the Olympia. It's going to be great.
More information at MiamiNiceJazzFestival.com. Of course, we want to zip through in our next 3 minutes with Philippe. So many great people you're bringing into South Florida. Stanley Clark, the penultimate jazz fusion bassist, coming Saturday, November 2nd at 8 p.m. to the beautiful South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. And one of the greatest Brazilian pianists, the magnificent Eliane Elias, in a tribute to Chet Baker, Saturday, November the 9th at the Olympia, the beautiful Olympia Theater, once again at the Gusman Center in downtown Miami on Flagler. And the South Florida Jazz Orchestra will be opening up for Eliane Elias. Powerful show. Let me continue, because we're running out of time, unfortunately. Solstice Jazz, Saturday, October the 26th, in downtown Miami at Soya E. Pomodoro, a wonderful restaurant I hear.
Yeah, Soya y Pomodoro is a great setup for authentic food and which fits very well jazz. They've been doing a lot of great things for local musicians for the last few years. The owner and the chef and his partner are also very very interesting people, very giving back to the community. They do a lot of great things, and by way of this festival, we also wanted to support what they do all year long. Again, Soya y Pomodoro, great food, great music on the weekends, Friday and Saturday night. Definitely a place people should go. It's kind of I kind of feel bad to talk about it because I would like to keep it just for myself. It's really kind of like a little gem that not so many people know about, and maybe sometime it's better that way. But
find out more information about Soya y Pomodoro at MiamiNiceJazzFestival.com and Solstice Jazz performing there Saturday at 8 p.m. Nikki Kidd at the Van Dyke Cafe, Wednesday, October 30th. She's a great talent and the wonderful fairly new jazz trumpeter here in town in residence at the University of Miami. Brian Lynch presents his multi-jazz session at the great club PAX on Monday, November 4th. Let me zip through this, if I may. Wednesday, November 6th. Bikini Jazz back at the wonderful Van Dyke Cafe, and Saturday, November 9th, the Derek Fairholm Trio, once again at Soya y Pomodoro in downtown Miami. And your closing night party on South Beach.
Yeah, on South Beach at the Riviera Hotel, which is a fairly new open hotel, brand new place. Very beautiful decor. It's a great setup for an afternoon jazz. That's our closing event. It's a free event. If you bring your ticket stubs, you will be receiving free cocktails there at the bar at the
Riviera. Munchies too.
Yeah, also munchies. Yeah, and wine tasting.
Founder and CEO of the Miami Nice Jazz Festival, Mr. Philippe Potesta-Herter, our guest today, opening up South Florida Arts Beat. Once again, for more info, Miami Nice JazzFestival.com. Thank you so much, Philippe. Good luck.
Nice is spelled like nice, N-I-C-E. So if you can find it, you probably misspelled it. Thank you.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Film critic Dan Hudak previews the second annual Key West Film Festival later on our program. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food. And our arts calendar features Deborah Margol, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Now our classical arts contributor, Charles Greenfield, brings us the latest from South Florida's oldest and greatest opera company.
This year, the Florida Grand Opera celebrates its 73rd season in their home of over 6 years at the Arts Center's Ziff Ballet Opera House and the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. While its ambitious and costly program in 2006-07 consisted of 6 productions, this season's production schedule for Dade and Broward audiences finds a comfortable schedule of 4 productions. In terms of management, the Florida Grand Opera has made a major leadership change with the recent retirement of longtime general director and CEO Robert Ewer for its new GD and CEO, Susan T. Dennis. An arts administrator for over 20 years, Dennis has most recently served as executive director of the Sarasota Opera for the past 14 years. The 2013-14 schedule consists of a contemporary piece, Morning Becomes Electra, regarded as one of America Opera's finest contemporary operas and composed by Fort Lauderdale resident Martin David Levy. 2 Italian classics, Verdi's Nabucco and Puccini's Tosca, and a French work that is seldom played in South Florida, Massenet's Thais. Susan Dennis's daring debut season will kick off at the Broward Center November 7th with the Southeast premiere of the challenging Morning Becomes Electra. To assess the changes in direction and make more sense of the upcoming productions, I recently spoke to the Florida Grand Opera General Director and CEO, Susan Dennis. Susan Dennis, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you very much.
Susan, this is your second season as CEO and General Director. What has the transition been like, and how do you assess the new direction you are taking the Florida Grand Opera?
It's been a great transition. I had great singers and operas lined up last year for me by our former General Director, Robert Huer. And really, this year is my statement on Florida Grand Opera, taking us in a little bit more of a more thought-provoking direction, with some operas that are new to the South Florida community that will hopefully stretch them a little bit, but yet with our standards, still give them operas that they're comfortable with.
Now, I wonder if you could talk a bit about FGO's economic well-being and its outreach to the community, especially for students with dress rehearsals and the Young Artist Studio Program.
Great. I'll start with the educational aspect of it. We are expanding our Young Artist Program. We've grown from 8 to 11 artists and continue to grow that program actually into a two-level program. And in terms of outreach to the community, it goes way beyond the dress rehearsal program. We do outreach programs in schools, in libraries, all throughout Miami-Dade as well as Broward County. So we do our very, very best with a small group and a very small education staff to cover children from every aspect of the community all the way up through middle school and high schoolers who do indeed attend the dress rehearsals.
And, for example, if you have a child who has what you think is a great voice, is it a matter of just an audition, or what is that process?
Well, actually, it's a good question that you ask. We will very soon be posting for auditions for the children's chorus for Tosca, and we are working toward, in my third year, of actually starting to develop a program for youth, so that basically we would start a chorus program where the children focused on singing classical music and opera in particular.
Now, I've read that you work closely with Maestro Ramon Tabar, the FGO's conductor. Tell us about your collaboration and what is your joint philosophy of opera, so to speak, in terms of the classics and the contemporary?
Well, first of all, it's a real pleasure working with Ramon. He's a real gift to this community, and I think that his credits aren't quite as known as they should be. A true musician, one of the most musical conductors I've known, his knowledge of the repertoire for a relatively young man is really quite spectacular. We share a lot of philosophy. Actually, I think we share all philosophy in the fact of what you're talking about is the balance of making sure that the standard pieces that even people new to opera really want to see are represented, but also that we start to stretch our audience to introduce them, not blindly, with educational programs and other ways of introducing them to different kinds of music, but really to start to investigate great masterpieces that are neglected or 20th and 21st century work.
Now, the terrific Wagnerian Brunhilde Deborah Voigt makes a one-night appearance Saturday, October 26th at downtown Flagler's DuPont building from 7 p.m. to midnight. I suppose this is just reward for the disappointed Wagnerians who wanted to see Tristan und Isolde this season. Tell us about the Diva evening, and when can we expect to start seeing Tristan, or maybe a little of the Ring cycle?
I've been hearing a lot about the Ring lately from many folks. Deborah's actually coming to be honored. We're starting an annual award of Lifetime Achievement in Opera Award. So she's actually not singing for us. She's coming in. She's actually engaged the evening before and the evening after. So she gets the night off. We're not going to make her sing for her supper. It's just really an added highlight to our annual gala, which is different this year. It's separated from our opening night. And it's, as you said, at the DuPont building. Generally, it's at the Arscht Center. Deborah's a great segue to Wagner, for sure, since that's primarily what she's doing these days. The most disappointed person was me. Tristan and Isolde is arguably one of my top five operas, and Ramon and I both wanted to do it. It really and truly was what I said in the press. We had three productions, physical productions, under consideration, meaning the sets and the costumes. Singers were lined up. Conductor was lined up. One of them became the stage director who has first right of refusal became unavailable. The second one, the company decided they didn't want to rent it. And we were at that critical point where we really, in good conscience, needed to release the singers. And we just truly couldn't put it together. But as you mentioned, Wagner is very, very expensive. The quality of the singers, the level of production value. And so it is a challenge to produce Wagner.
Now, as a real change of pace and space, the season begins November 7th at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts with composer and Fort Lauderdale resident Martin David Levies. Morning Becomes Electra. A quick synopsis of the work and your opinion of the singular achievement of the composer in this work.
Wow, a quick synopsis is tough. I guess it depends how much folks have actually read the Aeschylus tragedy. I mean, I'm not sure how far back people go, but it really is, in short order, about a family that's cursed. And it's full of murder, lust, incest. It's got everything in it, layered with an incredible score. And for me, a lot of people have asked me, why would I choose to start with that? It does respond to the community, since Maestro Levy is a present resident of Fort Lauderdale. But I think the layering of the piece, the complexity of the story, the way his music makes the drama of that piece come alive is really what drew me to it.
Verdi's Nabucco opens the 2014 year, January 25th, The Tale of Jews in Babylon. The famous chorus, Va pensiero su alle dorati. There's a very high soprano tessitura, very treacherous. What are we going to expect?
Well, the answer there is one word, Gulagina. We've really gone out and had Maria Gulagina come to South Florida to really make the role of Abigailia come alive.
And then a season without Puccini in South Florida seems like treason, and we will not be disappointed. Tosca hasn't been here for about 7 years.
Correct. Really excited to be producing it. Gorgeous set, spectacular cast, folks that are really well known for singing their roles, and I think it'll be a real vocal treat.
And your season ends starting May 3rd with Jules Massenet's Thaïs. It's not produced as often as Manon or Werther, a courtesan, a monk, an odd couple, a well-known Méditation, the entr'acte for violin and orchestra, and scenes from Act 2. What can we look forward to?
Well, Eglise Gutierrez, probably the number one answer, certainly a South Florida favorite, and just overall a visually spectacular production.
And finally, for our listeners, both opera beginners and veterans, what can we expect maybe from the following season? I know we're looking ahead a little bit. And any tips to beginners coming to the opera?
Start with the latter. Tips for beginners. This year we're starting talkbacks, so you can actually stay at the end of the performance. We'll pull up the curtain and answer questions. Singers will join us. It'll be a great experience. Looking to the future, we're nailing things down. We'll have that same kind of mix of new work to the audiences in South Florida, complemented by great classics.
Well, let's go to the opera. Thank you, Susan, for being on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you.
Changes in management and direction at a large regional institution like the Florida Grand Opera are never easy. But the FGO and CEO Susan Dennis seems determined to steer the way in a conservative and sensible fashion to survive both tougher financial times and a newer generation of opera fans. Years of solid and successful productions are its trademark, and it's not hard to imagine that the FGO will continue its quest to remain one of the country's leading opera companies. For information on tickets and scheduling, contact 1-800-741-1010 or go to their website at fgo.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken renders a word on food, and Deborah Margold gives us her Miami-Dade County arts calendar. Now, film critic Dan Hudak previews the second annual Key West Film Festival.
From John Waters to Paul Haggis, from bending steel on stage to an insightful look at the Cuban-American experience, the Key West Film Festival has upped the ante in its second year, and its offerings look very promising. Showcasing 35 films over 5 days, the festival, which runs November 13th through the 17th, is jam-packed with quality indie fare and the latest work from big Hollywood stars. For example, the documentary Running From Crazy chronicles model and actress Mariel Hemingway, the granddaughter of former Key West resident and acclaimed author Ernest Hemingway, as she strives for a greater understanding of her family history of suicide and mental illness. Other highlights of the second annual Key West Film Festival include Meryl Streep leading an all-star cast in the adaptation of the Pulitzer Prize-winning play August, Osage County, appearances and discussions featuring John Waters and Crash director Paul Haggis, and Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire director Mike Newell's adaptation of the Charles Dickens classic Great Expectations.
Do you wish to see Miss Havisham?
Let me look at you.
Come closer. What do you think of her?
I think she's very pretty.
You can break his heart.
It is the desire of the benefactor that he be brought up as a gentleman in London.
What do you think?
There are conditions, of course. The first is that the name of the benefactor remain a profound secret. The second being that you always retain the name
Pim.
He has come into a handsome fortune, and he has great expectations.
With so much going on, I needed to get in touch with Steve Ananez, the co-founder of the Key West Film Festival, to get more details. Steven, thank you for joining us in South Florida Arts Beat.
Thanks for the time.
I want to compliment you. It's the second year of the festival, and you have John Waters, Mariel Hemingway, Stephen Bauer, and Paul Haggis all at the festival, doing appearances, giving talks. Those are really good gets for such a young festival.
They're not too shabby. We're very excited to have them.
So how did this all come about? Were you like, hey, I think we can get John Waters, I think we can get Hemingway, or was it all, did they approach you?
I think it was a combination. Don't get me wrong. It was primarily us saying, hey, these guys would be a great fit for the festival. So, you know, whether it was one of our team members or our programmer reaching out, with our powers combined, we were able to lock it down. So,
and I'd be remiss not to mention you have Terry George as well, the director of Hotel Rwanda, a fabulous movie that starred Don Cheadle a couple years ago. So there's definitely some prominent talent coming to town. Also talented, though, is a gentleman in a documentary called Bending Steel. And this particular gentleman, Chris Shoke, who will also be in town, is able to literally bend steel with his own two arms, unless I have this mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Yeah, the director of the documentary, Dave Carroll, will be attending, doing a Q&A on the film, it's probably going to be one of my favorite films of the festival. And then the actual subject of the film, Chris, will be there doing exactly what the title of the film suggests, and he will be bending steel.
Bending Steel, live and in person, only in Key West. Now, I have to ask, how do we know that this is legitimate steel, like real steel that he's using? Do you have any idea?
We've done test after test to make sure that we have the most prime steel. No, I think it's just going to be a trust thing, unless you want to try to bend it yourself. You're more than welcome to.
That's an interesting challenge. Can you imagine just a random fan of the festival saying, hey, I can do that? So some cool stuff there. You also have a focus on local film and Florida filmmakers. Tell us a little more about that programming.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a fantastic programmer, Kareem, who's actually of O Cinema in Miami. His sole focus is to find, you know, great Florida filmmakers. And that's what we're trying to highlight, whether it's a short film, documentary. It really kind of ranges. We're trying to really touch upon, you know, really whatever type of style of film that you're into. There's so many different genres out there. We're not hyper-focused on any specific one of them, so we're just trying to create a great experience for, you know, as many people as we can.
I found it interesting, the I Am Divine live Q&A with the director, Jeffrey Schwartz, and the star of the film, John Waters. It's a profile of the star, Divine, of Hairspray fame?
It is, yes.
And John Waters is also performing his own one-man show, This Filthy World, at the festival as well.
Yes, yes, he is. If you haven't had a chance to see John Waters, he's something else. I'm very excited for that.
Can you tell us more about This Filthy World?
Well, it depends what your style is, but if you're into comedy pushing the envelope a little bit, mixed with a guy who knows filmmaking, I think that you will be pleasantly surprised. He's a real treat.
Interesting. And you had just mentioned the diversity of the programming and how it's suitable for all different tastes. We go from This Filthy World to a film called Running from Crazy with Mariel Hemingway, in which she chronicles the mental illness in her family. And Mariel will actually be in town. And as I understand it, there's a reception at the Hemingway house after the screening. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, how did this movie come, not to ask you to speak for Hemingway, but how did this movie come to be? Do you happen to know?
Well, I can't really speak to, I would imagine that, given her amazing and, very rich background, I would imagine that it was kind of a no-brainer for her to make a film about it, to educate all the Hemingway fans out there who probably wonder what it was like to be an insider. But for us, it was kind of just a no-brainer. Key West has such a natural tie to Ernest Hemingway, and we just, jumped at the opportunity to have her down there. Luckily, the documentary is fantastic, too, so it worked out.
Cool stuff. And you're showing some high-profile films, August Osage County. But the part that I'm most excited about for the festival is you have Paul Haggis and Terry George in town. They're doing filmmaker breakfast. Is this... any fan can go and have breakfast with Paul Haggis and talk movies?
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to be screening their films, Hotel Rwanda, Crash. I think they're screening three films each of theirs, and then doing Q&A, introducing them, speaking about the film. It's going to be pretty awesome. I'm personally excited to meet them. So.
And then you end with Cube American. If I'm pronouncing that correct,
yes.
With Stephen Bauer in town talking about the Cuban-American experience, which
yes.
again speaks to the diversity of this film festival.
Yeah, no, it's a, this is a film that has had its exposure in South Florida. It's the Key West premiere, but being that Key West is so very close to Cuba and one of our main theaters is the San Carlos Institution, It's just the perfect fit of film. It's a beautiful film. We're having Stephen Bauer, who's just a fantastic actor, who's right now he's in Ray Donovan. He was in Breaking Bad. He's obviously in Scarface. But we also have the editor of the documentary, as well as the composer, Victor Alvarez and Carlos Alvarez, attending. So it'll give a perspective on editing a documentary of that subject matter, as well as scoring a documentary, which... again, coming back to just diversity, we're just trying to give different perspectives of what it takes to make a great film.
And one last question for Stephen Hernandez, the co-founder of the Key West Film Festival. Stephen, it's the second year of the festival. You've grown in obvious ways. How would you like to continue to grow moving forward?
Oh, that's a good question that we ask ourselves daily. But I would say we're going to try to move more into having a year-round presence. We want to be around not just the 5 days in November. We want to be doing micro festivals. We want to be online, because there's no doubt about it that between digital and all the different outlets online, we can't ignore those. So that's kind of the direction I think we're going to be heading, is beefing up our 5-day festival, as well as having more of a year-round presence and online presence.
That makes sense, and I wish you the best of luck in making that happen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. The Key West Film Festival runs November 13th through the 17th. Screenings will be held in Key West at the San Carlos Theater and the Tropic Cinema. Other special events will be held at locations throughout Key West. For more information, go to kwfilmfest.com. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak, is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us A word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot do de do ya do do.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food, leg meat. I have a leg in my luggage, and it's coming home with me. It's a short leg. It's a pink leg. It's a salty, sweet leg. It's a leg I was not going to leave behind in Orlando, that's for sure. The leg once belonged to Chef Sean Brock of Husk Restaurant fame up in Charleston. I hope he's not missing it and hopping mad, but that can't be. He gave it to me, sent it actually, the leg. Some mornings I remember how large the leg muscle known as the ham is in my own body. I remember because it seizes up and causes me to frantically try and stretch it out. I am impressed once I get over the pain. When we consider animals from a culinary standpoint in the modern kitchen, too often we consider only the tender cuts of meat. They are the cuts that are not the workhorses of the anatomy. Our creator had to come up with a real mixture of muscles, tendons, bones, fat, skin, hooves, organs, and more to enable us to live, walk, eat, work, play, and rest. We are all of the animal kingdom, but in most cases we humans are on the eating end of the food chain. I think our creator would be mighty chagrined if we wasted his creations. I am joined in that concern by the growing number of chefs, nutritionists, social activists, farmers, teachers, and animal rights activists who preach the aptly named movement called nose-to-tail cooking. One day, long ago, my father was talking to a fellow car dealer while I was visiting him at his place of work, Van Aken Motors. I was in his office eating some fried chicken when I heard him from the hallway. "I'm a leg man, Vince, you know that." Vince was looking out at a woman shopping for a Buick and smiling admiringly at her. I was about 9 years of age and unable to grasp the more subtle depravity of men at the time. I stuck my small mitt into the cardboard basket of food and came up with a leg. Maybe that is what my dad was referring to. I drank my root beer and munched on. Chickens are a bit unusual, but they've been bred that way. The legs of those animals used to be more uniformly sized in comparison with the breasts. But through the acts of genetic selection and breeding, the birds of modern times are breast-heavy. The softer, white meat was determined to be more prized. Nowadays, I almost always buy the thigh meat or leg and thigh meat when I shop. The flavors are so much deeper. But the ratio of breast to leg disparity in the chickens is not the same in most animals we consume. To learn to cook the much more provident leg meat is an advantage whether it's veal, pork, lamb, or even goat. Easter at our home growing up meant a beautiful roast leg of lamb, mint jelly optional. But the apotheosis of leg meat is definitely the creation known as a ham. While I do love a Noche Buena roast pork made with the fresh version of a pig's leg, I doff my John Deere tractor cap to the men who learned to transform raw pig meat into the deeply complex beauty known as ham. And now that my luggage is safely home, I'm taking my leg and putting it in the fridge. But just until I can get my ham rack set up and slicer sharp. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West, and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Salt. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And we welcome back Deborah Margold, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Great to have you back with us, Deborah.
Thanks, as always, Ed. I just love being able to share all that's coming up on the calendar. So starting with tonight on view, and it's actually the closing weeks of this great exhibition, Love and Technology, at the Museum of Contemporary Art in North Miami. Love and Technology is a group exhibition of artists from all around the world who question the relationship between humans and technology. And just as an extra incentive, tonight it happens to be Jazz at Mocha Night as well. So it's beginning at 8 p.m. They are featuring the singer-songwriter Maria Alejandra Rodriguez. The galleries are open, and you can enjoy both the exhibition and a great, beautiful outdoor evening of jazz at the Museum of Contemporary Art in North Miami. And also tonight, we have a remarkable lineup of jazz artists, as you've just heard, for the second edition of the Miami Nice Jazz Festival. And tonight, the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center is proud to co-present the kickoff concert of the festival, and that's featuring Grammy-nominated soul jazz vocal sensation Gregory Porter, one of truly the most captivating blues baritones in music today. And so that's tonight at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center at 8 p.m. And also this weekend at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center is the 14th Annual Hispanic Art Expressions Exhibit, and that is taking place in the Studio Theater. Tonight, there's still yet more going on. The New World Symphony is performing at the New World Center, and as a special treat, also wall casting this concert, featuring none other than the magnificent pianist Emmanuel Ax. He'll be performing Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 4, and Michael Tilson Thomas is conducting the orchestra and Mr. Ax. They'll also be performing Brahms' Celebratory Academic Festival Overture and the Schumann Triumphant Second Symphony, and that's tonight at the New World Center on Miami Beach. Also wall cast, so you can relax in the Soundscape Park and enjoy the concert for free if you prefer. And it is also being performed tomorrow night at the Knight Concert Hall at the Arts Center in downtown Miami. This being the last Friday of the month, it's Viernes Culturales, Cultural Fridays, and that's the Arts and Culture Street Festival Gallery Stroll in Little Havana that features a free walking tour with Dr. Paul George, artist fairs with local artists and artisans, live music in Domino Plaza, and magnificent food vendors. So it's a fun block party kind of evening, very relaxed. If you haven't been yet this season, go check out Viernes Culturales, Cultural Fridays in Little Havana. Just recently opened is the exhibit of Growers, Grocers, and Gefilte Fish, Florida Jews, and Food. And in conjunction with this wonderful celebration of the origins of Jewish ancestral cooking, everything from pierogies of Poland to the salsas of South America, the museum is also co-presenting a fabulous film with the Miami Jewish Film Festival called Divine Food, 100 Years in the Kosher Delicatessen Trade, which takes a mouthwatering look at the famed Osherwitz family's rise as cornerstones of purveyors of kosher food in America. That screening is Sunday at 2 p.m., Sunday, October 27th at 2 p.m. Also on view at the Jewish Museum of Florida FIU is Graphic Details, Confessional Comics by Jewish Women. Festival Miami is coming in for a landing, and boy, has it been a great festival this year. Hats off to Shelley Berg and the whole UM crew.
Yes.
Tonight, it is Grammy Award winner central, including tonight's artist who's performing at UM Gusman Concert Hall on UM campus. Grammy Award winner Vince Mendoza is performing with the Frost Concert Jazz Band and the Henry Mancini Institute Orchestra. Fabulous concert tonight. And then tomorrow night, this is actually sold out, the Arturo Sandoval Grammy Award winner also. That concert sold out, but they are taking a waiting list. And then Sunday, there's a fun children's concert. The Okie Dokie Brothers are performing an Americana folk concert for the whole family. And then again, this is one of my favorite things that I don't talk about enough. In Miami, we are privileged to have so many great artists who not only come and perform here, but actually do master classes and free lecture demonstrations for audiences. And one of those is happening in conjunction with Festival Miami on Monday at 5 p.m. on campus at the Clark's Recital Hall. Grammy Award winner and co-director of the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, Christian McBride, is going to present a master class. And audiences are welcome. Admission is free, but you are required to make a reservation and get a ticket. And then Mr. McBride and his trio are going to perform on Wednesday the 30th.
Bravo.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my favorite thing. The Arts Center is a very busy place this weekend and next, including their performances and presentation of Metamorphoses. This is the winner of the 2002 Tony and Drama Desk Awards for Outstanding Play, going through this weekend, tonight through Sunday the 27th, at the Carnival Studio Theater. And then also tonight and tomorrow night is Palabolas, this unbelievable modern dance company who are shape-shifting, physically mind-blowing, unbelievable, powerful dancers who literally, and I mean this literally, defy gravity and pull off total unexpected physicality are performing. And if that didn't inspire you enough, here's another opportunity to see them in the more informal masterclass session on Saturday at 11 a.m., Palabolas is presenting a free to the public 90-minute masterclass, ages 16 and up, please, if you want to participate. And again, tickets are free, but reservations are required, and that's 11 a.m. between their two performances, Friday and Saturday.
Wow.
Unbelievable, wonderful. We're so lucky. We are so lucky. And then coming up next weekend, we have an incredible performance featuring the Oslo Repertory Theater Company's presentation of Romeo and Juliet, and this is with shadow interpretation. That means that there are ASL-trained actors shadowing and performing characters on stage with the voiced actors. Very cool art form. If you haven't seen it yet, check that out. That's next Friday at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center at 8 p.m. And then finally, next weekend, on Saturday and Sunday, the Chopin Foundation concert series kicks off, and they are presenting Menon Berveniku. He's an emerging young pianist from Kosovo making his South Florida debut at 3 p.m. at the Granada Presbyterian Church in Coral Gables. So if there's so much more, check out our website, please, at miamidadearts.org, all one word, miamidadearts.org, and pick and choose your way through some great art.
We thank Deborah Margold, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs, for all of that great information and much more on your website.
Please check it out. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Take care. Great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let me add, there will be two upcoming art exhibits in Miami to benefit the Center for Great Apes Sanctuary and their 20th anniversary, November 9th at Pinecrest Gardens and December 5th at the Miami Rum Club in Wynwood. South Florida artists will be represented as well as top national artists in the exhibit. Additionally, art created by the apes at the sanctuary will be included. For more info, go to centerforgreatapes.org. or call 863-767-8903. Also this weekend, more for the Free Gospel Sundays taking place at the Adrian Arsht Center. This Sunday at 4 p.m., Pastor John P. Key and New Life performing. Once again, this Sunday at 4 o'clock, it's free. For more info, call the Arsht at 305-949-6722 or go to thearshtcenter.org. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Charles Greenfield, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Deborah Margold. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.